give me a minute. I might be able to get this working again.
I'm going to blame construction on an energy efficient building. Dims the lights, turns off the power.
So, as a technical point, Nathan, is there any way to extend the speaking distance with these mics?
Increase the gain.
Because otherwise, you almost have to have the thing halfway down your throat.
Well, that's typical with microphones.
What you can do is raise this, because I notice you have to kind of bend over. That's part of the problem. If you raise it and speak towards it, it might work better.
Okay.
So you have to sit a little bit higher.
So, next order of the agenda is San Juan County PhD, number one, operations report, Pam Hutchins.
Copy.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good afternoon. As of the meeting last meeting, I put the operations report for the district on our website last week so that the commissioners as well as the public could see them and have an opportunity to read them before this meeting. So I will just give a highlight of the report. Our cash totals at the end of May were $834,529.01, and our disbursements for the month were $19,890.17. So we have a healthy reserve, even keeping back what we need to pay for our second half of the PIMC subsidy payment. Public records, we had another three public records requests, but they've been centering on one particular incidence of the reports that they keep asking, and it's been responded to and taken care of pretty quickly. The legal expense, the accounting expense, and the audit expenses, the county did separate those out now, so you can see in your expense reports that they have separate line items, and there were journal entries in your packet that showed how we redistributed it so that the line items are correct for those categories. The financials, basically they are running either below budget. The things that are running a little bit over budget are things that have a one-time expense that are incurred early, and then the revenues that we will be getting in the 2011-2012 Medicare report, we will get about $45,000 back in revenue. That check should come in any day, and then we also had some refunds that came back that we were not expecting. So for our budget revision that we'll talk about later, those have been redistributed, and so our next, after the budget revision, the budget should be more in balance for the over budgeted items. Do you have any questions about the financials? No, okay.
I have one.
Okay.
No, I do, actually. This sounds frivolous, but it is, actually. Account 652, there's a lot of numbers here. But anyway, have small and attractive assets. What is a small and attractive asset?
Those are things that are below, in our definition, below $1,000 that are, you know, things that we may buy, like recorders or, you know, office equipment, printers. Like, we just replaced one of our printers that was close to $600. So those type of things, the staplers we buy, you know, all of the office supplies, just something that we want to keep up with and that the auditors require us to keep up with, but they're not something that would go into a capital expenditure.
That's a small and attractive. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a specific term that the state auditor's office
uses. Yeah, in your language, a term of art.
Yeah, I think it's 5, isn't it? And 5,000, not 1,000 or 0.
5,
but then Mike.
5, okay,
yeah,
5.
Yeah, it says 5, 1 here. And
it's 5,000.
5,000,
yeah.
Yeah, so there's a miss.
Well,
then here
the threshold, that's the threshold for whether something gets capitalized and treated as a fixed asset or piece of equipment as opposed to a small and attractive asset is $5,000.
Oh, so the threshold.
And
so we budget $1,000 a year, but could spend up to $5,000 on any one thing on a small. Okay, I mean that works, but it's a stretch.
Yeah, I've only budgeted $1,000 because we don't tend to purchase many of that. So that's what. Any other questions? Okay, and then operationally, we had several things going on in May. Of course, we were trying to. We put in place the audio equipment that we're trying out for the first time today. Chief Kitzing and I, myself, went down to Olympia, talked to the state auditors. We filed our 2018 audit report on time. And we also have been working on the long-term care. And we'll talk about that later in our meeting with a more detailed report on that. And that's it for operations. Any questions? No? Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Next agenda item, the Salmon Island EMS Operations Report. Chief Kutzing.
Thank you, Commissioners. I've worked on putting together our operations report for basically recapping the month of May, and I have called out a financial review on the first page of the report, but there's some revisions to that. Chris is able to give you a little more detail on the numbers for revenue and year-to-date expenses are both, I mean, monthly and year-to-date, both revenue and expenses are correct, but in terms of percentage of budget projections, there's a few little changes. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris and let him explain some more of the financial review.
All right. Good afternoon. So, yeah, the revenue, we have $204,000 of revenue this for the month of May. And expenditures were the $283,000, which brings us to $1,115,000 year to date of expenditures. That includes the, you know, last month we talked about the big GEMT payment that we're expecting to receive, but we had to give them money first before they gave us the more money. So. It's a kind of, you know, when someone comes up to you and says, if you give me $20,000, I'll give you $80,000 in 2 months, and you wonder whether or not you're actually going to get it. And usually you'd say no, but in this case, because it comes from the government, we expect it will. So anyway, we did remit $96,000 this month. So that's factored into that $283,000. So if you back out that one-time event, it was actually $187,000 of expenditures, and which brings us to $1,018,000 year-to-date. So where does that leave us in terms of percent of budget? We're at 57.6% of our budget for the year on revenue. So we're way ahead, considering we're 42% through the year. And we're at 43% of budgeted expenditures for the year when you back out some of that stuff. So we're pretty much right on track for the year. And considering there's a lot of one-time expenses, we're in very good shape in both situations. So far, we've brought in $123,000 in GEMT funds this year. We got another $27,000 last month.
And so now we're sitting on a healthy 6 months of expenditures. Our total cash is $1,238,000, which is so much better than it was. It has been historically. It's just wonderful to see that we're getting up to a healthy cushion and healthy reserves. Other things accounting and finance-wise coming up is this month, this coming month in July, Carl and I will be doing the working on the revised budget or the amended budget for 2019 and also starting to budget out for 2020. And as part of that, we're going to spend a bit of time with the billing company and figuring out really, what are we? What should we expect? Try to budget in or expect with these GEMT funds going forward. So, don't really have solid numbers on all that yet, except for the 400. Is it 468 that we're going to get back for the 96,000 we sent them? So, other than that, I expect it. We're still going to. You know, we've received $123,000 so far this year. It doesn't seem unreasonable to expect at least to expect about that much for the rest of the year. On top of that other chunk. So, anybody have any questions?
All good news.
Yeah. The other good news, I don't think Pam highlighted it enough, is that when we got the report filed in last month, that was the earliest it's ever been filed, right? So that's pretty cool.
Thank you, Chris. The other things that I want to point out in the operations report, we did have 107 calls for the month of May. That brings us up to a total of 447 calls here through May 31st. 21 more calls than last year, which represents about a 5% increase. Average EMTs per call 2.1, and 16 Island Air calls, 12 Airlift Northwest calls, and zero both for the Navy and for the Coast Guard. So I was able to break out some of the average response times that Dr. Appleton had been asking about last month and have those broken down for you there. I do like your idea of doing more with a radius from the station. However, what we had set up previously with North End, South End, middle of the island in town. So I used those categories there for your consideration. And overall, the data that we have, even though we had 107 calls, data was present for 76 of those. Why that is exactly, I'm still trying to hammer out, but I think that has to do with things that were stood down, calls that, for whatever reason, multiple patients happen sometimes in these calls with one incident number. I need to do a little more digging into the metrics on that to figure out why we're only reporting on 76 calls. But of the 76, you can see the breakdown there. Again, if we're using the suburban benchmark of a 20-minute response time, which is pretty generous considering, we're well within the limits of that. But I've also broken down the under 8 minute, which is kind of the standard for more of an urban area with a combined type department, and we're doing well with that as well. So our average response time for those 76 calls was 9:44, and that includes all of them, regardless of going out to the Cape, Roach Harbor, or right here in town. So again, these are more raw than I would like them to be. I'm going to start looking, figuring out how we can adjust for staging, whether or not we're dealing with multiple calls at the same time, which again skews some of those numbers where the primary crew is already out responding before, you know, trying to bring a secondary crew in to respond to the simultaneous call. Stand downs, it would be nice to factor out the interfacility transports because they're not necessarily a true representation of how we're serving the rest of the community. So I'm still working on it. It's a work in progress, and I appreciate your patience as I work through those metrics. Based on the community, we've had 4 CPR and first aid classes. During the month of May, we reached 45 additional people, bringing our year-to-date up to 292 people who've taken a class some in some form or the other. We also did a refresher course for our South Enders, which is a program that's basically was started by one of our EMTs, Francis Smith, and Commissioner Smith also helps with that program. We did their refresher class, and I think there were about 20-some people in attendance. So that community of about 40 responders is poised and ready to go. They are interested in their providing for the community, and I'm working desperately to make them our poster child for not only other neighborhoods within on San Juan Island, but some of the remote islands as well. Logistics of trying to get those responders notified of calls is always challenging, but there are things in the offing, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. For operations, again, working on the metrics for you so you have better information there. Our mobile data terminals have been updated. We have software loaded for the Spillman, which is the computer-assisted dispatching that the county uses, and it looks like we're nearly ready to go online and live with that, where not only is it the radio communication with dispatch, but we're actually physically touching a screen, which makes a more instantaneous response in terms of when we're en route, when we arrive on scene, so our metrics are going to get even more solid. The more exciting part of that program is that there's a mapping feature which will show the site of where the incident is and a route to get you there, also letting us know what other resources are en route. So, for example, if there's a traffic accident that has an ambulance dispatched as well as fire apparatus to help with extrication and or traffic control, we can see where all those resources are and how they're responding to that incident, which is really very exciting. In terms of a fatigue assessment, nothing to report in May. However, there's one that we used that fatigue assessment once in the month of June, and that was a timeout by one of our paramedics due to a high acuity call. Very stressful call that was responded to, timed himself out of that particular, the remainder of that shift, and then we had dual coverage, so there was a way to make sure that shift was covered. Medical protocols. Yes, Dr. Appleton.
Thank you for reporting that. I think that's important because our fatigue program is not what the National Association or the state or the North Region says it should be the program. And I'm wondering, and I don't need the answer now, I'd like the answer down the line, is how our fatigue program matches fire's fatigue program. And if, as we go through this, looking at things and thinking about mergers, how are we going to put those two together? But I'm glad to hear someone's using the fatigue reporting system that we have.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Medical protocols, we're still waiting on ALS protocols. We have been doing some background work. I know McBrice has been working and trying to get some of the logistics done that will enable us to use a mobile app for our responders so that they would have the protocols at their fingertips on their smartphones, searchable, different features that would help that. But there are some pieces that need to be put in place, like, okay, who's going to host this, and what credit card can be built to this, and all that kind of good stuff. And we've been working on getting those questions answered. We're also working on the Water Rescue Marine Response Program, working with Chief Williams over on Orcas and Chief Havner over on Lopez, as well as Chief Collins and myself, and our people that we've tapped to be our marine officers, trying to make sure that we have that resource, Boat One, the Sentinel, available as a fire response and an ambulance resource rather than a patrol boat or a glorified water taxi to get, whether it's sheriff's deputies to meetings or other places that they need to be. We're working on getting protocols in place to kind of keep that boat in reserve and keep it response ready. So that's ongoing. Want to give you highlights on our EMT class. All are finished. Of the 9 students, 4 have taken their national registry and passed. We're still waiting on two of them to get the official check mark on the Washington State licensure, but that's just pending. So four of the nine have passed. They're full-fledged EMTs and ready to respond. The other five are due to take their national registry examination later on through the month of July. I think we kind of gave them an end of July deadline. All are poised and ready to go. So that's looking really well. Our one student who is an ORCAS student also took the national registry and passed. So so far we have 100% pass rate on our first attempt, which is excellent. To give you an update on CODAN, which is the radio update program, Sheriff Krebs went and presented that to the county council, and they are on board with the program as well. Sheriff Krebs is looking at some funding options to try to offset that, some leasing options. Now we get down to the nitty-gritty of how do we pay for this and when do we get started. So we got a green light basically for that, to make that happen, and I will keep you updated as that goes on. I have one piece of bad news, and that is our administrative assistant, Diane Carlshagen, has taken a job with the county, more in line with her personal and professional goals. So we are looking to replace our administrative assistant, and we do have a line on a replacement. Everything looks good. She has tentatively accepted the position. Now we're working on logistics of how we get her trained up and what her availability is. But I believe by mid-August, she'd be ready to go and be here full-time without any other commitments. So bad news and a ray of hope at the end that, that we have that place, that position replaced. Community paramedicine is something that I have a report here, but I do want to set up, set you up and let you know planning. Right now, Director Volk is our one and only person who does the community paramedicine work. She desperately needs some help. We're reaching the busy season. She has three, four jobs, full-time jobs that she does basically for us. And we're trying to get a situation where she has some help. One of our paramedics has expressed interest in being involved with this program. And for July and August, I think we have kind of a stopgap tentative plan in place that we can, by doing some overtime shifts that the medics are willing to take on and some creative juggling with the schedule, actually get Laney some help to cover the community paramedicine. And as we move forward and get the a solid proposal together, explaining budgetary concerns, scheduling concerns, and have a full fleshed out proposal, we'll be coming back to you to ask for your approval as we put that program into place. So that's coming up. Also news regarding our MPD and supervising position. I think most of you have heard that Dr. Sullivan is planning on not renewing his contract with the State Department of Health and will no longer serve as medical program director for San Juan County. We're working on finding a replacement. Director Volk has taken on that. That's part of the fatigue assessment that we need for Director Volk. But she will have an update later on under new business on the agenda and give you more information as to that. Our fire and EMS integration program is continuing to move forward. The steering committee met again in May and June. Right now, the last that we've done is to set up specific points that were brought up in the community advisory committee. Their recommendations, we've highlighted those things, such as operations, as district boundaries, as levies, all these five or six categories that are buckets that we have to deal with. They have been assigned, they've been defined, they've been assigned leads, and now we're working on timelines to make sure that those things are happening. And if we have any more to flesh that out, I think Commissioner Smith will be able to do that in the committee reports if there's more that needs adding. I do want to just point out that we did have a meeting on Stewart Island with residents there. Stewart, as you know, is one of the islands served by the public hospital district. And concerns have been brought out about, well, what can we expect in terms of response? So Chief Collins, myself, Lieutenant Katie English, and the PIO from Fire, Chuck Daldorf, along with Dr. Sullivan, all went out to Stewart Island, talked to a group of about 40 residents there, and outlined plans. For example, if you're bringing a patient into Friday Harbor or to Roach Harbor by private vessel, where do we meet? Where's a good rendezvous point? Talking about landing zones for helicopter and airlift, airlift and or fixed wing transport off of Stewart Island. Where do you meet? Where do you go? Who are the players involved? Where do we have first aid stations set up? We also went out there with the expressed intent of looking at the supplies that they have, replacing outdated items, making sure the AEDs have good batteries, non-expired pads. We've worked on putting that program in place and getting these guys up to speed with what they can expect from us, how they can kind of help manage the scene at, you know, on site for them until we can get a response to them. And again, try to take that template and bring it to the other outer islands and make sure that they understand what kind of level of service they can expect from us and how we can facilitate making sure those residents are taken care of.
Do we have a database of those people?
Not yet, but we have some contacts that are putting those other residents in place who we can rely on in terms of our points of contact and who has training that may be able to facilitate any sort of care on the island.
Is the county disaster preparedness person able to help you?
We hadn't explored that, but I will check that out.
I mean, it's the same. It's the same thing.
Absolutely. Certainly.
Because they have some money to pay people over at the county, and they keep stealing our best administrative assistants. You know?
Yeah.
So we got to get some back.
Very good. We are also talking about Pulse Point, which is a program that is a mobile app, so people who are trained in CPR can be alerted to potential calls within their area. Chief Collins is kind of spearheading this right now. It was talked about several years ago on the island, but the cost was prohibitive to the county. It required upgrades to the computer-assisted dispatching system. It required subscriptions on the part of the county, and it was just way too expensive at the time. Some of those upgrades have already happened with Spillman, which is the computer-assisted dispatch system, and I think there's more of a willingness to share that expense throughout the county rather than having one island or one agency foot the bill for that. It would solve the problem of our communities that, like our Southenders, it would help solve the problem for response on some of the outlying islands if these people who take the time and energy to train and become certified in first aid or CPR, now they're alerted to a potential CPR in progress kind of case, and they can come running, which is what they're all itching to do anyway. And at least help us, you know, stop the clock on that patient until we get more definitive care out to them. So that's encouraging and something that we're looking at. And then finally, the last thing that I wanted to bring out to you is the Washington Cares Report, which is based on cardiac arrest and survival rates. Generally for us, we know that we have a very small sample size to look at. But Dr. Sullivan was able to give us some data based on 7 years, from 2012 to 2018. Our N, or the number of patients that were looked at, was 59. So while statistically not terribly significant, it's better than looking at 5 or 6. So we've got some decent data. But the statistics that were pointed out were of patients that suffered cardiac arrest and then were released from the hospital to come home with little to no neurologic deficit. That's the benchmark. That's what we're looking at. Nationally, that type of survival is 8 to 8.9%. In the state of Washington, it's 13.4 to 16.1%. in San Juan County, it's 34%. That's amazing. That is the community, that is the responders, that is the training, that's the fact that there's AEDs everywhere that have been worked hard at with grants and coordination to try to get that all. It's all coming together, and don't let this out, but if you're going to have a heart attack and cardiac arrest, come here. This is where you need to be. So that's my report.
How's that number trending?
That I don't know. I would like to know. I'm hoping that the numbers keep going up.
I think, frankly, you sort of understated how terrific 34% is. When I go down to San Diego, I'm going into an 8.5% survival rate. So that's why I hang out here so much. That's number one. And a question, though, too. You know, King County is like one of the primo survival rates in the nation. How are we stacking up with King County?
I don't have data for King County. This was a quick and down and dirty report that Dr. Sullivan gave me. I haven't had a chance to flesh it out yet and get a little more, because it takes into account all the Utstein, what's the word I'm looking for, criteria. It looks at, I mean, it's looking at VTAC, VFib, asystole. It puts it all together. It lumps them all. There's no breakout in terms of witnessed, unwitnessed, none of that.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you, Carl.
Absolutely.
Carl, thanks for looking at those response times.
Sure. And I've
been working on that. I appreciate that so much, and I know that you've got a lot on your plate, and you've been working really hard the last couple of months. So thank you.
Great. Welcome.
Any other comments or questions of Carl?
The only other comment is the International Association of Cardiac Arrest Factors. One factor of getting out of the hospital alive is actually the hospital. And those that actually have post-cardiac arrest programs is probably the biggest determinative. And it's the fact that we work with a hospital that has a program like that really helps a lot.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Thank you.
Again, thank you, Carl. Next agenda item is audience participation. Dr. Greiman.
Thanks. I was one of those survivors from here 18 years ago. It was VFib in the pool. Response time was less than 2 minutes, and I'm here because of that. We also did a study in the mid-90s of our cardiac arrest and out-of-hospital survival from the beginning, and we were as good as King County then. I can get you a copy of that article.
That'd be great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
So anyhow, this just takes 1 minute. As you all well know, being rural is a special challenge, whether it's trying to sustain a hospital, a nursing home, which is come and gone, a pharmacy, which are pharmacies, independent pharmacies out here, are challenged. Long-term care, major problem. A number of uninsured and underinsured, and Medicaid is a huge part of the safety net for you. And so you're dealing with a whole system, and I wanted to bring you my latest book, which deals with the whole system. It's up to 6 weeks ago in references. It's all evidence-based. It's not opinion. And it's Trump Care, Struggling and Dying Under Trump Care. And but I thought each of you as commissioners may find this useful in better understanding an updated view of where the system is and how you can try and deal with that system. So, anyhow, Michael, and thank you for that good letter you did on Kaiser.
Thank you, sir. Is it autographed?
Yes.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
Anyhow, good luck. I'm glad you're here. And special challenges, they don't go away. They just keep coming.
Thank you so much, Dr. Guyman. Diane.
I just would like to request that we make the press announcement in Spanish as well, after the comments from the Commissioner Sullivan and Lindstrom.
Okay. Agreed.
I do too. That's a great idea. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.
And Dr. Johnson, I think you had your hand up, sir.
Sometimes I feel like I'm in the presence of giants.
Is today one of them?
I wasn't looking at you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think we all know that we're still in an air ambulance insurance crisis. I see it's the OIC commissioner, the OIC report is an item later on in the agenda, so cut me off anytime you like. I think the crisis is worse made by the OIC investigation report, because it gives license for the next insurer to do the same thing with no regulatory hammer whatsoever. So we have a really special challenge ahead of us, as if you didn't already have enough. So I'd like to thank you for sponsoring the community forum. I hear it went well. I didn't get to go because I was in the ICU at St. Joe's. I'd like to especially thank Dr. Appleton for giving my portion of the presentation. I think, and I would like to hope, I hope to think it made a difference in terms of how things played out with Kaiser and so forth. But as you know, it ain't over. It's far from over. We have a huge challenge ahead of us. The investigation imperils county EMS in many ways. I've written a letter to the journal that should guest column that should be published this week, and it contains the following recommendations. We need an air ambulance crisis response and policy development spearheaded by the PhDs. There's already a letter of rebuttal on the investigation report that is being developed by the County Board of Health. It needs to have constructive counter proposals so that we're not just complaining. We're coming back with a constructive response to the OIC. Is this turned on? Okay. Dr. Edwards has already sent in a letter to the OIC requesting a clarification of definitions of screening and stabilization. Which is really important, because there's a critical misunderstanding on the part of the OIC about what that means under the law. Give you an example. We have, when we transfer a patient from the ER, I'm retired now, I don't say, but it hasn't changed. It's the same thing. There's a form you fill out that says stable or unstable. And most times, emergency physicians check stable, because what they mean is stable for transfer, meaning there no material deterioration is expected during the transfer, during the flight. That is different from stabilization, meaning the emergency is resolved. Okay? The patient still has an emergency medical condition, unresolved, but they're stable for transfer in the mode of transfer that's been ordered, namely air transport. So thank you to Dr. Edwards for already getting that started. And I think that the letter of rebuttal from the Board of Health is going to be very important, because it's going to be very important key piece of community solidarity to support EMS, which is in grave peril right now because of this air transport insurance issue. So that's number one. Number two, we need a review of county air transfer policies. If they need to be updated, that's the county MPD and EMS responsibility. But it can be we could assist with a subcommittee or citizens advisory group. Number three, we need to look at air transfer documentation standards. That needs to be reviewed and updated. That's a PIMC, hospital responsibility, and an EMS agency responsibility. I just pointed out one of the documentation issues. The docs always check stable. A lot of those should be checked unstable, because they are unstable, even during transfer, but they still have to be transferred to a higher level of care. So I'm bringing out issues that could be better addressed for future reference with respect to making sure that these plans cover emergencies the way that they're supposed to, not according to their vague and cursory policies. As you know, the OIC only held Kaiser to its own policy, not to island appropriate policies. They only held them to Kaiser's policy, which was so vague as to be completely useless. So we need to look at that and at the documentation. We need to develop safe alternatives for EMS transfer and additional resources for ferry transfer. Talked about the sheriff's boat and so forth. We can't just rely on air transport. Again, an EMS agency responsibility, but something that we can research and assist with, possibly with a subcommittee. We need to review and comment on LifeWise health plans, LifeWise air transfer policies, which I've already looked at, and I can assure you they're not as bad as Kaiser's. They're a little better, but they're not even close to adequate. We need to promulgate our own island-appropriate air transfer policies. We need to collaborate with LifeWise, OIC, and the air ambulance agencies for mutual adoption. And we need to keep the community informed of our progress in tackling this issue. Once again, this could be facilitated by a subcommittee or citizens advisory group, much like the CAG that worked on agency consolidation, because this is a complex issue. It requires expertise. It needs a small group that can do the research, that can, for example, gather policies from other rural communities. See how they do it. See how we can do it better. And it's gonna take time, but we don't have much time. We got at the very most 6 months if we get started today. And working with these other agencies is going to require a lot of communication. Letting them know that we're not sitting on our hands and just allowing ourselves to be victimized by unscrupulous health insurers. I'm not pointing the finger at anybody right now, but it's going to happen again if we don't get it fixed and if we don't start it now.
Well, thanks again, Dr. Johnson, and your...
I have a hand up. Sorry.
And I say once again, because it's not the first time that you have participated in getting this dilemma fixed. So my hat's off to you. As far as a CAG equivalent, you know, you cited the PhDs, or three PhDs in this county. Lopez and Orpiz, and I will approach them in terms of perhaps a collective thrust in that direction. Also, I think we need to include the Department of Health and the Board of Health, since they are sort of major players in this situation, and make sure that it's not further fragmentation of the efforts to resolve it, because to date there are a lot of people, but sort of working independently, and we need to strike unison, as you mentioned, and I absolutely agree with that too. Any other comments or questions of Dr. Johnson?
Thank you for all your work on this.
Yes. We put in 2 or 3 hours, right? A lot of work.
And Lauren, you did mention a submission to the journal, correct? When is that coming up?
This week.
Very good.
I would ask something. So we were talking to the Orcas and Lopez PhD, so we can do something. So who's going to do that? Where do we go from here?
Well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that through Ann Present.
Oh, excellent.
And fortunately, we had that joint meeting in Lake Chelan, and representatives of both PhD 2 and 3 were there. And that was a topic of discussion a number of times, so that we will just kind of refresh it and see if there's consensus as far as a CAG equivalent, as I said, but also I think to get all of us batting together, you know, it's going to achieve the greatest impact with a collective thrust, so to speak. We need to do better in that regard, frankly. So, and communication is key, too. Okay, Dr. Johnson, thank you, sir. Okay, next agenda item is unfinished business, committee reports, CCC, Ana Lisa, anything there? Yeah? Okay. Anything with regards to the helipad, Mark?
Yeah, there'll be a meeting with some Peace Health representatives and yourself next Monday, July 1st. We'll see where that goes.
Correct.
That's an uplifting report.
Without a downdraft.
We're just winging it, I got it. Yeah.
But it is noisy, and the jet fumes are nasty, so. Okay. Integration Steering Committee, Rebecca.
Something to report. Carl started it. It was the middle of the month. The main task was to review the project management tool, the Gantt chart. By the way, all Gantt means, it's not an acronym, it's just named after the guy who designed it, invented it. But it basically, it's the main, it was the Gantt chart was created by the two chiefs, Chief Collins and Chief Kutzing. And then we assign leads to the various sections and subcommittees, and we reviewed the entire project chart, the majority of which came directly from the CAG's recommendation report, and then we assigned leads to all of those with all the subcommittees. So before the next meeting, which is July 1st, which is right around the corner, each subcommittee will be working to determine a timeline. Some of the subcommittees have already done their research and will be reporting to the committee, and some are just, we're just going to talk about a timetable and try to figure out what makes most sense and who's working with whom. The committee also agreed that Duncan Wilson that an April 2020 special election for town annexation is a suitable timeline. So that's going to come up a lot faster than we think. So he's starting to work on that, has already worked on that. We talked about messaging and outreach. It was discussed in subcommittee leads Chuck Daldorf and Nathan Butler. We'll basically take the information and questions from this meeting and come up with a plan to present on July 1st, the next meeting. So basically the whole Gantt chart with the assigned leads and all the other information regarding the integration are all posted on the website, so you can see everything. So we're moving along, and instead of doing it all silo-y, we're having subcommittees so that we can all try to work together and then come together and you know, just so it doesn't last for 10 years. That's it on that one.